We're back. The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. And we have a website, taylor-report.com. And we expect to be speaking very shortly with one of the people who's organizing a protest against the visit to Toronto of the president of Rwanda / General Paul Kagame. And later we're going to be talking to Isaac Saini. And we, of course, do hope you pick up that book. We've been talking about Jim Dan challenging the Mississippi firebombers, as Charles McLaurin was saying. That was Jim was extremely daring, a daring young man. And in the book, you will find an account of the instructions on how to be a driver for someone in the Mississippi Delta who was being threatened by a Klan. There were a little list of rules, things you will do. One of them is never let anybody pass you on the highway. And on a couple of times, there are highly adventurous moments because of that stricture about what they had to do. Again, it's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and I believe we're joined now by Gallican Kasana, who is one of the co-author with Professor Hakazimana, pardon me. In Le Journal today, there's an article detailing the issue of why Canada is hosting a notorious African leader, Mr. Paul Kagame. Are you there, Mr. Kasana?
I'm here. Thank you very much.
Hey, well, thank you for joining us. You have this article today in Le Journal, and this is something that has come up rather quickly. Is it so that the president of Rwanda, a highly controversial figure, is going to be coming to Toronto?
Yes, actually, he's coming on this Saturday on September 28th. Mm-hmm. And it's going to happen at the Sheraton Hotel in downtown Toronto, mm-hmm. 123 Queen Street. So yeah. We ask everybody to be there.
At the Sheraton, the new Sheraton.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that people who live here, people from Burundi originally, from Rwanda, also Tanzania, and Congo. I guess part of the issue is the fact that the United Nations has pointed out, and other states, that the Rwandan government is in supporting an armed group in eastern Congo. Is that one of the issues?
Not only that, but there's many, many issues we have with President Kagame. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we protest today, we're going to protest against Kagame. Mm-hmm. It's the man who murdered hundreds of thousands of people in Rwanda and Congo. Mm-hmm. We protest against the Canada government mm-hmm. they give to the. It's a shameful to support a man who has crushed the contempt of human and civilian.
Uh-huh.
And yes.
This is Gallican Gasana. Now, I'm aware of that at the moment there's a woman named Ingabire, Victoire Ingabire. She's being held, but people who helped her in her attempt to run for office in Rwanda, some of them have been killed. Are you highlighting that issue?
Yes, we do. We will, and just against that as well.
Mm-hmm. What could you tell us? I understand, too, now, for example, the subject of Tanzania has come up. I read your article, and I noticed that you call attention to an exchange, a very heated exchange, very quite remarkable, between the president of Rwanda, Mr. Kagame, and the president of Tanzania, which it looked almost like a possible clash between the countries. Could you talk about that?
You know what, Kagame, he tried to be a man who is in power in that great region, which is, he just have to be there to be, because, you know, he's in power in Congo right now.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't accept anybody to tell him that to have mm-hmm. a peace in that region, Kagame have to come out or discuss with the people who is against him. Mm-hmm. That's what that's really the issue is between him and President Chikwete.
Yes, I believe that there had been a proposal at the African Union meeting calling for the government of Rwanda to do, I think, two things. One was to withdraw their forces from Congo, and then a second thing was to enter into negotiations with some of the armed groups, and that seemed to have been what triggered the bitter response of Kagame.
Really, that's the things Kagame used to just to try to change what President Chikwete said. Mr. President Chikwete says Kagame must discuss with all forces against him, including FDR.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said, because Mr. Kagame knows that FDR, many of them are responsible for genocide in Rwanda in 1994, so that's what he used. He's just saying it. Only federal, because he knows, everybody knows, it's the people who is responsible for happening in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. But really, Mr. Chikwete once said that Kagame must sit down and discuss with the people who is against him.
Yes. And Mr. Gasana, very often when the media talks about these matters to do with Rwanda, they refer to ethnic differences, and they say, well, there's the Hutu and the Tutsi. Could you speak to that issue as applied to the Kagame government and who's opposing him?
Listen, when you see President Kagame today, he's not against Hutu or Tutsi. This guy is killing everybody, Tutsi and Hutu and Congo.
Indiscriminate.
Everybody, including the overseas people. So what I'm saying here, today, the prime minister is a Hutu.
Mm-hmm.
Kagame is against anybody who tries to speak out. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Now, this demonstration, which will be on the 28th, it's a coalition, is it not? Could you tell us roughly who some of the groups are and what's their perspective?
We doing this this protestation against Kagame with Congolese people, Burundians, mm-hmm. Rwandese people, all people from the Great Region who is going to be there. Also, and there are friends from Canada, from everywhere in Europe. We're going to be over 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be something important for Canadians to find out about, and it sounds to me like it'll probably be a large protest. We're very glad you could talk to us. I hope we can talk again after the weekend and just see what we've all learned after the 28th.
We really want to talk to the Canadian people, Canadian government, and everybody who doesn't know what's going on in the Great Region, who is ready for Kagame.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the Rwandan and Congolese people, we need justice in that region.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a good place to start is at the new Sheraton on the 28th. Mr. Gasana, thank you very, very much for being our guest.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. As I mentioned, we were speaking Gallican Gasana, one of the organizers of a federation of organizations from different parts of Africa protesting. He, together with Professor Kazimana, published an article today in Le Journal, a progressive publication in Quebec. We'll of course follow this story. We're going to be talking shortly with Isaac Saini, and he is together with others, organizing an important meeting. And I believe Isaac Saini is on the line now. Are you there, Mr. Saini?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks very much. Africa's Unknown War, Apartheid Terror, Cuba, and Southern African Liberation is commemorating the 25th anniversary of the Battle of Quito, Canavale. It's September the 27th and 28th at the University of Toronto at 45 Wilcox. And it's a two-day affair. It begins Friday evening at 7 p.m., and then on Saturday it begins at 8:38 in the morning and goes till 5 p.m. This sounds like a big event. You're one of the key organizers. Tell us about why this is so important.
Well, I think it's extremely important because it's the 25th anniversary of an event that's generally not known in the West, which is specifically a series of battles that took place in Angola in which the Cubans played a critical role that really accelerated the end of the racist regime in South Africa, immediately leading to the independence in Namibia because the apartheid state's illegal occupation of Namibia now became untenable. And so we want to tell this untold story, and we're also telling it within the context, not just as Cuba's role in 87-88 when this battle took place, but also what has also been forgotten, this regional war of terror that South Africa waged from 1975 to 1978 in order to preserve the existence of the racist regime. And basically, this war cost millions of lives, caused untold numbers of injuries and lacerations of human flesh and human spirit, mm-hmm. as well as billions of dollars worth of damage. So we want to tell the story. We have over 18 presenters during this conference and so on. And we have some major figures coming up from Cuba. Jorge Risquet, who was Cuba's major diplomat in Africa from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, will be at this conference. We have
he's an important witness. I mean, anytime he speaks, he's sort of laying the foundations for the history books.
Yeah, well, he...
Because people want to know his role and what he thought and what he saw.
Yeah, and he's part of history. He's part of the historic leader. He's part of the historic leadership of the Cuban Revolution. And he was not only, you know, he's not only a commentator on this history, he was part of making this history and so forth. So he's a critically important person. We have Prexy Nesbitt, for example, who was a representative of Frelimo in the United States. He was an American citizen, but he represented Frelimo, which was a liberation movement in Mozambique. So he's a very well-known anti-apartheid activist and mm-hmm. someone who's a scholar as well, who's going to be at this conference. We have probably the premier scholar on the role of Cuba in Africa, Piero Glehaces from Johns Hopkins University, a Guggenheim fellow who's won all sorts of awards and wrote a very famous and acclaimed book called Conflicting Missions, Havana, Washington, Africa, 1959 to 1976, and then has a new book coming out called Visions of Freedom, which is the second half of that volume. We have Walter Turner, for example, a well-known scholar and an African-American activist in the anti-apartheid movement. We have John Saul, who many mm-hmm. of you people know from Toronto.
Very well-known. Yeah,
very well-known and very much involved in the anti-apartheid struggle and still a very powerful and prominent commentator on unfolding events in South Africa. So we have a very strong event, and what we start off with on the evening is we have a showing of a film called a short film called Sisters and Brothers Keeper, Cuba and Southern African Liberation, which sort of provides sort of some context for the discussion that will take place the next day. Then we have a series of panels on Saturday starting, we start at 8, we start around 9 a.m. in the morning. And the first panel is Apartheid's War of Terror, Regional Terrorism and Destabilization. That's at 9, followed mm-hmm. at 11 a.m. And then later on we have a break. Then at 11 a.m. we have Cuban Southern African Liberation. And then we have a panel on the Battle of Quito Carnival itself at 2 o'clock. And then we finish with the last panel at 3:45 p.m., looking backwards, thinking forwards, which looks at how the liberation movement, is seen, reflected on, and what are the consequences that have emerged from this liberation movement, and to look at contemporary developments across Southern Africa today. Were people's dreams fulfilled, those who participated in the anti-apartheid struggle, or were the things not go quite exactly as we wanted? So we'll have a whole discussion on that. And we also have some cultural performances sprinkled through it. Mm-hmm. Dr. Afua Cooper, a well-known scholar on the black experience in Canada, will be performing some of her spoken word poetry as well as participating in the event. And we have some other spoken word artists as well and other people performing as well. So we're trying to make this, we have limits in our finances, but we're trying to make this as full a program as possible.
Yeah, much of it is a free event. People can just come and attend.
Yeah, it's a free event. We made that decision to make it a free event because it's, so that people, we'd have the maximum attendance of people and so on, and we're providing refreshments. We will mm-hmm. accept donations mm-hmm. because of an event of this nature does require significant financial outlay, but it is a free event. Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out, it's at the William Dew Auditorium, which is on 55 which is on 45 rather, Wilcox Street. And you know, and this has been sponsored by the New College of the University of Toronto. So we're very happy to have them involved, and there's a number of different sponsors as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to go. I could go through the entire list, from the Canadian Network in Cuba to various programs in the University of Toronto, to a different book list, which has been critical, to you know, unions like United Steelworkers and Canadian Union of Postal Workers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's been a broad support for this event.
Yeah. This is Isaac Saini, who is one of the principal organizers of this, Africa's Unknown War. And Isaac, let me, just from a historical perspective, one of the reasons it's unknown is it was such a defeat for apartheid that that the great powers and, of course, the old rulers, the white power people of South Africa, don't want the world to know that it was Cuba and Angola together who defeated the South Africans.
Yeah, and I think there's a number of, and I think you hit a number of factors on why it's unknown on the head. One of the things, obviously, is the United States, for example, and the great powers that be, want to claim credit for ending apartheid, even though they supported the racist regime almost to the very end and labeled Nelson Mandela a terrorist, someone who they now claim as being an icon of freedom and justice and equality.
Isn't that must drive you a little wild when you hear them do that.
It does. It does drive me
because didn't they turn him in? Wasn't the CIA the ones who gave his locations to the apartheid government?
Yeah, I mean, it's well documented. It's come out clearly in declassified documents. It was the CIA who informed the South Africans where Mandela was, and the South Africans used that intelligence to arrest Mandela in the early 60s, and then he spent 27 years in prison. And then he was labeled a terrorist by both, not only the U.S. government, but by the Canadian government, and there was complete support for the apartheid regime. Reagan, for example, when South African government in the 80s was launching one attack after another, one terrorist raid after another, against various governments, causing untold, as I noted before, deaths of men, women, and children, right? And untold billions of dollars worth of damage. The U.S. government supported them completely, and so did Margaret Thatcher. So what happens is then Cuba, an island of the so-called third world that's not supposed to participate in making history, then does something completely incredible that takes the Americans completely by surprise, and those who believe that the peoples of the so-called third world are meant to be nothing but pawns, Cubans play a very important role in history by basically on their own and on their own decision and their own volition in accepting or basically deciding to assist the Angolans who had asked them for their assistance and defeating the so-called invincible white South African army.
Mm-hmm. Very important. I mean, and also, by the way, they were exercising their right as a sovereign state to call on assistance of a brother state. Which, by the way, is something the Americans do without even thinking about it. They have 700 bases all over the world and go anywhere they like.
Well, they deem, every U.S. president, including Obama, said they deem themselves the exceptional, indispensable country, which is extremely chauvinistic.
Yeah, everybody else there, by definition, is dispensable.
Yeah, what people need to realize is that when the South Africans invaded Angola, the racist regime invaded Angola in 1975 to basically put in place a puppet regime that would be under the tutelage and control of the racist regime in Pretoria, the Angolan government issued an international SOS call. Mm-hmm. And some African nations, like Burkina Faso, Guinea-Bissau, and Nigeria, if I remember correctly, they did send troops. But Cuba had a long relationship with the Angolan Liberation Movement, and Cuba was the only country, in a sense, that was in a position to respond in a decisive fashion. And so they sent, tens of thousands of troops, and, those tens of thousands of troops played a critical role, but they were also doctors, engineers, and teachers, and so forth, who also played an important role in Angolan's struggle to defend its independence and sovereignty. And so this is a critical battle that's been forgotten, and basically speaking, we are going to recover it because it is a country and the countries together standing outside sort of Eurocentric conceptions and standing outside of great power out of the great power access who make history. They don't end up being pawns, right?
Yes.
And simply playthings of the great powers.
Well, it's such a precursor, too. It's the 25th anniversary, but now we see the fruit. We see now Venezuela, Bolivia, Brazil, Argentina, others beginning to act like sovereign countries and to tell the Americans no and to say yes to Fidel and the Cuban people.
Yeah, and Cuba's internationalism runs extremely deep. The idea that you know, the revolution to have any meaning must extend international solidarity to other peoples, whether it's helping them with sending doctors to overcome hurricanes and you know, the ravages of various diseases, and whether it's sending teachers to overcome illiteracy, or whether it's, in the case of Angola, sending their sons and daughters to defend the country from racist aggression, to defend its sovereignty, to defend its independence. In fact, an African elder once said that Cuba is the only country to have come to Africa and gone away with nothing but the coffins of its sons and daughters who died in the struggles to liberate Africa.
Oh,
so this sort of captures, in an essence, what we're talking about, and captures, in an essence, this profound moment in history that has been marginalized in the West, and is only fairly recent. It's 25 years ago. I mean, that's fairly recent history. That's
indeed. And it did set such a great example. Isaac Saini, we're very grateful you could be with us. We look forward to this program at 45 Wilcox Street in Toronto, beginning on Friday, September the 27th at 7 p.m., where there'll be the film.
And we'll also have free soup. We're having what we call ITIL soup that's going to be served up and so forth. It's very good corn soup and so forth. So it, by RAS Ival of One Love Vegetarian. He's going to be serving some free ITIL corn soup. We're providing that. And we're going to have an event showing of a film, a discussion afterwards, and people will have a chance at the evening event to mingle with people, and then on Saturday to participate in very detailed discussion about an unknown part of history.
Wow. Well, okay, you won me with the soup. Well, Isaac, thanks very much. I look forward to seeing you there.
And I look forward to seeing you as well, and I look forward to seeing many of your listeners.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Doc. Bye-bye. And that's going to be the 27th and the 28th, University of Toronto, 45 Wilcox Street. Begins Friday evening, 7 p.m. with the film Brothers and Sisters Keeper, Cuba and Southern African Liberation. By the way, that's going to be soup, and there'll be a panel. And Saturday, there'll be panels and speakers, including the Cuban representative who was in Angola at the time, and that's going to be an important one to attend. You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us at taylor@ciut.fm. Of course, we're on the web, taylor-report.com. I'll remind you that we were speaking earlier, and what a great story we got from Charles McLaurin about the right to have a gun in Mississippi. And we, of course, were discussing the book by Jim Dan. You can obtain it at barakabooks.com, Challenging the Mississippi Firebombers, Memories of Mississippi, 1964-1965. Incidentally, on the cover is a wonderful photograph, and it's of young marchers in Mississippi. And one of them is holding up a sign, and the sign says, Uhuru, Freedom. In Swahili. And you say, wow, the Mississippi Delta, B.B. King country, Uhuru. Segregationists didn't know what they were in for. It was going to be a bigger adventure than they knew. Anyway, there's a wonderful book by Jim Dan, barakabooks.com, and of course, a different book list, and there are other ways. You're all very inventive, I know, at finding about these things. One final note on Paul Kagame. After he leaves Toronto, he's going to New York, where he's going to attend a rally. It's going to call on the U.S. to attack Syria, and he's going to invoke his credentials as part of, I don't know what he thinks his credentials are. He was the only leader in Africa when George Bush attacked Iraq in 2003. He was the only leader in Africa to endorse the attack. He was, one of the few that advocated U.S. bombing of Libya. So he's a particularly interesting kind of individual. We need to know more about him. May he soon be removed. You're listening to Taylor Report. And Terry, thanks very much. Phil Conlon, thank you very much. And we'll see you next week.